We are friends, boys. Rest assured, we are friends. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to continue our discussion about fantasy hockey and hockey pools in general. From NHL.com, Pete Jensen. Pete, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure coming on.
And always a pleasure having you, Pete. As you know, this is our fantasy hockey preview show. We've been discussing some of our sleepers. We've been discussing some of our busts. First overall pick, in your Pete, if it's a one goal, you know, goals worth 1 point, assists are worth 1 point, is Sidney Crosby your first overall pick in your hockey pool?
I mean, I think if points are equated in that fashion, I think he has to be. I think in regular standard Yahoo leagues with the six categories, I think it's hands down Alex Ovechkin, but obviously in that format, when you look at Crosby's career goals per season, you look at the heightened upside with the addition of Phil Kessel. I think in that particular format, you can't go wrong with Crosby at number one. He's the active leader in points per game, career points per game, and he's pretty much adding a 40-goal scorer in Kessel. We've already seen some preseason highlights on Kessel's end, putting the puck in the back of the net. It could be a match made in heaven, and both guys could have a chance to finish in the top 10 overall. I really expect that to happen, and Pittsburgh just has as good of a top six as you'll find in the league. So, yeah, can't go wrong with Crosby in a points-only league or in a league where goals and assists are equated in the same, in the same light.
Pete, we were talking about Steven Stamkos earlier, and he had a bit of a down year by Steven Stamkos standards with 72 points. Do you expect him to be back at that point-per-game range, especially considering that he's a pending UFA?
Yeah, I think he should be in the 80-point range. I mean, a lot hinges on who his line mates are. We saw in the postseason he was shifted over to the right side. If Jonathan Drouin, plays a two-way game and earns his stripes under John Cooper, he could be the top line left wing, and it could be a nice combination. But again, there's a lot of questions with Stamkos, and while I do expect him to get back to 80 points, I don't have the same level of trust in him as I do with John Tavares, even with his line mate situation, and Tyler Seguin, obviously with the leading scorer, Jamie Benn. So yeah, regular standard leagues, I would actually take Jamie Benn. I would take Tyler Seguin or John Tavares over Steven Stamkos, because I think those guys are more of a sure thing.
Pete, when you look at these first round, second round picks, pretty valuable, and take a look at your rankings, and they're pretty consistent across the board on NHL.com. But you have Patrick Kane at number 10. I know you're using the Yahoo Sports and all the categories, but if you're talking regular points pool or six category pool, are you willing to take the risk of who knows what happens there? And we don't know. We're not prejudging anything, but are you willing to take that risk and draft him at the end of the first round?
I actually, in our NHL.com mock draft, I was, obviously with the uncertainty, he dropped in the draft, and I took him in the late second round. I think if he drops in your draft, definitely take the chance, especially if you can get him in the second round. First round comes with risk, but he's been a close to a point per game over the years. He's top 10 in that category since he entered the league. I think he has as good of a chance as ever to finally surpass his previous single season goal total of 30. I think it's a long time coming for him to get into the 35-40 range, and he's got some nice young center options, I think better than Chicago had last year in terms of upside when he was playing alongside Brad Richards a lot. So yeah, as of now, if you're expecting him to play and he's at training camp participating in everything, He has a great chance of finishing among the top 10 or 15 fantasy players. So if you're able to get him early second round, late second round, go for it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is NHL.com's Pete Jensen discussing fantasy hockey and fantasy hockey forwards, getting you set for your upcoming hockey draft. Pete, one guy that you have ranked pretty high, again, based on the, so the Yahoo categories, is, you know, which have, you know, five and six categories as opposed to just goals and assists, is Corey Perry. You have him ranked going in the first round. You have him ranked going 12th overall. Meanwhile, last season, a bit of a down year for Corey Perry, only 55 points in 67 games played. If you're in a straight goals and assists pool, where do you place Corey Perry?
Goals and assists, I mean, if you're not counting penalty minutes or hits or anything like that, I mean, he's more of a maybe a second-round pick. But he is, if goals are weighted more than assists or just obviously goals are more scarce in general, and if they're worth the same, he's a guy that could drop 40 any given season. If you're in a multi-category league, he's a could get you 60 to 100 PIMs with 200 plus shots, which is a realm in fantasy that is not well covered. So he's really a rare category coverage guy. He's that type of coverage and could finish. That could lift him into the top five any given season. So especially coming off a down year, if you're able to get him early second round, he's a steal really at that spot in the multi-category league. And he's obviously playing alongside Ryan Getzlaff, who he has for years. And that's usually traditionally one of the best point pairs in the league. So can't go wrong with him. He's a top liner, top power play, and physical force, and really a goal scorer. He's one of the few guys that has that 45-50 goal capability in the whole league. So he's a great buy low coming off a relatively down year by his standards.
Yeah, Pete, agree with you 100% on Perry and Getzlaff. We want to get to what a lot of fans like to hear about, and that's breakout picks. And two of your breakout picks that I found really interesting were Brandon Saad on Columbus, coming over from Chicago, and Ryan Strome, of course, brother of the recently drafted Dylan Strome. Why do you think those two players specifically are due for breakouts this year?
I think Saad is just, you think over the years, who he's been playing behind power play, whether it's Kane, Tave, Sharp, Hossa. I mean, right now it's him and Ryan Johansson. Columbus has a very deep forward unit, but no one who I believe has the offensive capability, and really he's a premier power forward at only 22 years old with all the playoff experience he's had. So I think it's a nice elevated role for Brandon Saad. I think he's going to see much more power play time, more like 3+ minutes as opposed to, 2 minutes or 2:30 per game. And I think if he starts getting into, he was a great even strength producer last year. If you get him into that 20 to 25 power play point range, he'll make the jump to 65, 70 points. And Columbus could really surprise some people. A lot of people have been talking about them in the offseason given their moves. I think if Bobrovsky stays healthy and if that team in general avoids injuries, Saad could have a breakout season and Columbus could be one of the top three teams in a tough metropolitan division. As for Strome, I really liked what I saw from Strome coming of age a bit in the playoffs when he was moved to Tavares' line. He was actually more consistent this year. I know early in the year it was Brock Nelson who started to bust out. Then in the middle of the year, Anders Lee was scoring goals. He finished with 25 on the season. But really the most consistent young point producer for the Islanders, very under the radar, was Strome. And I think if the Islanders finally look at the big picture and consider that Kyle Okpozo is maybe better suited for a second-line role. They don't know if they're going to keep him next year. It's a contract year for him. If you move Strome to the right side of Tavares and stick him there, looking at the big picture and looking at him as a player that could stick there for years to come, he's a guy that could come out of nowhere to score 65 points with a great plus-minus, and he's attainable right now, really late in fantasy drafts, you know, especially when you look at his potential. So I really like those two picks. Saad would have to be taken probably around the top 100. Strome could be obtained much later, but they're both great, great buys on the fantasy landscape right now.
Pete, we talked previous segment about the Colorado Avalanche and a bunch of the guys last year who underachieved. Now Ryan O'Reilly's moved to Buffalo, so we won't speak about him. But looking at your rankings, again, on the based on the Yahoo scoring system, you have Nathan MacKinnon in the early 50s, so say early kind of around the fifth round, and then you have Matt Duchene around the eighth round. Why do you have those players where they are, and why do you have MacKinnon ranked ahead of Duchene?
I think MacKinnon is in a better line mate situation. He's played a lot over the past 2 years with Gabriel Landeskog, and then you look at like the Swede and Swede connection with Carl Soderberg, who they brought in. I think that's the way it's going to shape out, and I think MacKinnon really had an unlucky season last year. You watch some of those games, he's just swarming around the puck, and he's very active on the power play, and he, you know, the shots just weren't falling for him. I like the line mates much better for Nathan MacKinnon than Matt Duchene, who's probably going to be playing with either or both of Tanguay and Iginla. Remains to be seen. He's fluctuated a lot over the years. I mean, still a very young player, but I don't have the level of trust in him based on, you know, the stats and the eye test. Especially last year when things went down, I think MacKinnon's going to come back hungrier than ever. I think MacKinnon in general, I think, is going a little too high in fantasy drafts this year. He's going like in the 30s or 40s. I mean, I would more wait for MacKinnon until the fourth or fifth round, to be honest, because I think Colorado has, you know, still a suspect defense. I know they worked on it over the off season, but they still worry me a little bit. In general, I think the line mate situation will be much better for MacKinnon than Duchene, and I would favor Duchene. I would favor MacKinnon much higher, you know, in fantasy drafts.
Pete, before we let you go, we got to ask you about some Winnipeg Jets, because especially here in Winnipeg, people are going to be wanting to draft those Winnipeg Jets. So, first question is, who are you taking first, Blake Wheeler or Andrew Ladd? And when it comes to Nikolai Ehlers, you know, the rookie who's highly touted here in Winnipeg and across the league, where are you advising people to take Nikolai Ehlers?
I mean, I'll start with Ehlers. He has a chance to play on the wing of, you know, on one of the top two lines. I think he has very high upside. He's been putting up crazy numbers in juniors, and obviously with Frolik out of the equation, I think that Ehlers, a lot will remain to be seen. I think standard leagues he'll go undrafted. He's the guy you want to take in a non-keeper league, you know, maybe with your last pick, just take a shot in the dark on him. If you're in a much deeper league, obviously, that has keeper implications, you're going to be taking him, you know, probably just outside the first 10 rounds because he does have high upside. I like him as a deep sleeper pick, not like a regular sleeper pick, more for the deeper formats. Andrew Ladd actually was the best category coverage asset in standard leagues, pretty much besides Ovechkin last season. When you look at everything he brought to the table and obviously hits, he had a career year last year. He's just incredibly steady.
Yeah, it's a penalty really minutes too, right, Pete?
yeah, penalty minutes. He does it all, shots on goal. Andrew Ladd, I think, can be obtained later just because of perception than Blake Wheeler. I think Andrew Ladd is really the ultimate draft bargain. Obviously, if you're in a league with Winnipeg Jets fans, you're going to view him much higher, but I think just based on the perception of the entire league and most fantasy owners are ignoring those types of players. Blake Wheeler, also top 30 finish last year, has been one of the most underrated players in the league over the past 4 or 5 years. I think Blake Wheeler, a good time would be fourth or fifth round, maybe even a little earlier. I don't think you can go wrong with reaching for Wheeler. And then once you get to the sixth, seventh, maybe even eighth round, if he drops that far, Andrew Ladd is also a nice pick. And I expect Winnipeg to put up a fight to get back in the playoffs. They're talented enough. They're deep enough on defense and definitely on offense. So I think Winnipeg has a nice shot to continue its success, carry it over from last year. And if they do, Ladd and Wheeler will be consistent producers and a big part of that success.
Pete Jensen covers fantasy hockey for NHL.com. He's the NHL.com fantasy insider. Pete, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and good luck in your drafts, everybody.
Likewise to you too, Pete. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to defensemen as it relates to fantasy hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before 11 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our fantasy hockey preview show. We'll talk about defensemen this segment here on the program. It is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This weekend at Rumors, Rob Schneider in town, sold-out shows everywhere. Thursday sold out. Both shows Friday. Both shows Saturday. Sunday, the 7:15 show is sold out. I am reliably informed there are a few, and I mean a few, tickets available for 10 p.m. on Sunday night to check out Rob Schneider. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, talking about defensemen now in terms of fantasy hockey, we're going to be joined at the top of the hour by Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey to talk about defensemen as well. You know, defensemen are always sort of an interesting category when it comes to the hockey pool. You know, your top defenseman last year was Erik Karlsson. He got you 66 points. It's going to put him sort of, you know, overall.
Well, I mean, remember how many points the leader got.
Yeah, the leader in the NHL was, you know, so Erik Karlsson would have been a solid second round pick, I think, in a hockey pool last year.
Without the need for defensemen.
Without the need for defensemen, that's right. I mean, without...
Many pools have defenseman requirements.
Right. Without any requirements at all, just in terms of straight, you know, looking at all the skaters and, you know, just thinking about it, Erik Karlsson finished overall in the NHL, he finished 24th in terms of points. I mean, obviously, with defenseman requirements, you take him, you know, very early in your pool. But at 66 points, 24th overall in the league, a second-round pick with those numbers, how confident are you to take him again? Would you take him in the second round again coming up this year?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in Erik Karlsson's game, guys, that makes me concerned that he can't replicate it. In reality, I mean, the guy is talented, he's young, he's smart, he's just... He leads the rush. He roams as he kind of sees fit. If you look at percentages-wise, he had 21 goals last year. You might think, oh, percentage-wise, he was batting at an unusual number.
15, 16, 17%.
Same number as his career, almost identical to his career percentages.
7.2%. He scored on 7.2% of his shots last year.
And what's his career percentage?
His career average is 7.1%.
Now, granted, that number factors into the 7.1, but... Before that, it was always in the sevens.
That's right.
Every year except for his first year, it's in the sevens. So you look at that, and he's going to play top power play time, and he's going to play a ton of minutes. He's playing for the same coach.
Mm-hmm. The year earlier, he had 74 points. The year before that, he was had his terrible Matt Cook-related injury.
Yep.
But 3 years ago, he had 78 points. Can you make the argument that Erik Karlsson's a first-round pick?
You probably could. Make the argument, again, depending on how many teams are in that pool.
And how many defensemen is required to be taken as well.
Exactly. A lot of people that have basic hockey pools don't have defenseman requirements, but I think especially with defenseman requirements, I don't know if he ever gets back to that 78-point range. I mean, that season was incredible, but you forget that he's only 25 years old. And this Ottawa Senators team surprised a lot of people last year, Rich. You know, Mark Stone, obviously, mm-hmm. emerging as a great rookie, former Weekend, of course, and then, you know, you had Zibanejad had a good year, and, you know, that was a good surprise. So he's got talent there to pass the puck to. So I'm taking Erik Karlsson first overall. Reminds me a lot, Rich, of Scott Niedermeyer in the sense that he's so smart with the puck. He's got the speed. He's just an intelligent hockey player. You know, and I think when you look down the list of other defensemen to take, I think, you know, PK Subban, who tied for second with 60 points last year, I'm most likely taking him again. Montreal Canadiens are going to score more goals this year. And I said a couple of segments ago, I really like Alex Galchenyuk now moving to center. I think he's going to have a better season than he had last year. And he's obviously young too, and the sky's the limit for him. But I think PK Subban is another guy. You know, you forget he's pretty young too, in mid-20s. And, you know, I think that with Carlson and Subban, I think they're just a step above that kind of next tier. And that's not to say
do you put Brent Burns into that tier?
Well, I think yeah, you take Brent Burns again. I think I don't know. I think you know Brent Burns obviously has that ability to play forward, but he's on defense now. But I think that to me, you know, I'd probably put Carlson one, Subban two, and then you know maybe Burns I think is still in the top five.
Burns has a little bit of I like Brent Burns. Always have huge shot on him, just huge shot. The one concern slash possible upside is that he has a new coach, so the how he'll be deployed under Pete DeBoer may be different than how he was deployed by Todd McClellan.
What about Dustin Byfuglien in a contract year?
Well, that's a good question, Drew. I mean, Brent Burns and Dustin Byfuglien are kind of the same. They're probably the only two players that can do what they do, is move to forward with the big shots and move back to defense and be impactful players. I like both of their games. I mean, you can certainly take issue with some of their defensive reads and defensive plays, but they have a ton of talent. Yeah. Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, to be honest, Dustin Byfuglien has flexibility in lots of pools to be classified as a forward or defenseman, although usually at the beginning of a draft, you'll declare him as one or the other. Sometimes, in, for example, Yahoo pools, he can be both. Mm-hmm. He's actually better on defense than he is a forward.
Sure. Forward, he's a 45-point player. Defense, you know, which are dime a dozen.
I think he actually produces more points, too, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Like, as a defenseman. So where do you, it depends on if penalty minutes and those things are a factor, but even if they're not, I think he's a top-five defenseman.
And I think something else to...
Although Myers might cut into that a bit.
Yeah, and I think you know Myers. You're talking about a guy who, you know, if he's healthy for a full year, can definitely be around the 40-45 point range. I wanted to just quickly say, Drew, when you're looking at defensemen, you know, we talked about some of the top defensemen, guys like Mark Giordano, Chris Letang. They each missed around 20 games each.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, I think, are top 10 defensemen. You have to consider that if they're healthy for the full year, they might be third, fourth in the entire league in scoring. And
defensive score.
A guy that you know had a bit of a down year last year, even though the team did really well, that I think his point totals will be better next year is Shea Weber. He's been in the 50-55 point range throughout his career. I think he's going to be a little higher. So I'd put him up there as a top 10 guy to take.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey to continue our discussion about fantasy defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the McKean's Hockey Director of Analytics and Pro Scouting, Gus Katsaros. Gus, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Fantasy Hockey Preview Show.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Always a pleasure to have you on with us, Gus. We want to focus on fantasy defensemen with you as we continue on with our preview show here. You know, and we were talking before the break about Erik Karlsson, you know, 66 points last year in 82 games, you know, tremendous numbers, led all defensemen in the NHL. You know, but, you know, if you look back at his career, you know, he's had a 78-point season 3 years ago. He had a 74-point season 2 years ago. Do you think that he can get back to being that, you know, 75 to 80-point defenseman that he was a couple seasons ago?
Well, 80 points might be a little bit on the high end, but, you know, a 70-point plateau isn't really that much different than 66 points. I think it just kind of depends on where the Senators are, essentially, in their entire state of affairs. I mean, last year was a bit of a, I'll use a quote-unquote, like, retooling year. They had to find a little bit of a different identity. yet he still put up 66 points. So there's no reason to believe that he doesn't have the ability to eclipse 20 goals and 70 points, which is kind of, you know, 20 goals for a defenseman. I think only three guys did that last year, and I wouldn't expect to see a lot more than two do it next year. So I think that he'll be one of the two people to be able to hit that 20-goal plateau.
Gus, John Carlson last year finished fifth amongst defensemen in scoring with 55 points. His career high before that was 37 points. Do you think John Carlson can duplicate that this year? And maybe who's another candidate to be this year's John Carlson?
You know, the thing about Carlson, though, is he probably did have the potential to put up those kind of numbers, like in the 45 to 50 range. But playing with Mike Green and sharing some of the offensive duties was one of the reasons I think that may have kept him a little behind. Now I think that this year he gets a full free reign. He ends up becoming the main catalyst on that blue line. He's the main puck rusher, and he's the guy that with the point shot. So I don't see 50 points being out of the realm of possibility, although I would claim that 55 is pretty high on that side. I would expect him to hit anywhere between 45 and 50 points. The player I expect to break out in a better way in that regard is probably John Klingberg from Dallas. He quietly stepped into the scene when they needed a right-handed shot last year. They desperately required that right-handed guy, and he ended up becoming a vital cog. So, mm-hmm. You know, he brings more to the table than just a strictly offensive game, and those extra minutes will definitely help accumulate a few even strength points here and there. Mainly expect a lot more from the power play from him. But I think that this year's candidate to be a John Carlson type, you know, out of nowhere breakout would be John Klingberg.
You know, Gus, one guy that interests me is Keith Yandle. He comes over from the Coyotes and obviously an offensively inclined defenseman, but he goes over to New York and there's a lot more talent on the back end. Ekman Larson's obviously talented in Arizona, but there's not ton else on the back end. He comes to New York, obviously plays with guys like McDonough, but behind them, talent-wise, where do you see him fitting in terms of creating offense in New York?
Well, I mean, the one biggest issue that I thought the Blue Shirts had was puck movement. The blue line isn't as mobile as I think that people would expect it to be. You know, that power play is a little bit anemic as well, so Yandle has that point shot. So he's able to rush the puck, he's able to jump into holes, and he's able to shoot from the point. So I think that you have three things that the Rangers all had issues with last year. Aside from the Ryan McDonough blue liner, there was very little on that black end, the back end to believe that they would have a big supportive blue line as far as scoring goes. Dan Boyle was supposed to be the stopgap there, but it's clear that he's just not that same player. So I think that what you'll see out of Yandle is you'll see a lot more rushing out of the zone. You'll see the breakout happen with him, and you'll probably see him as a prominent point shot right next to Ryan McDonough. The thing about Yandle when he was with Oliver Ekman-Larsson in Arizona, too, was pretty interesting because he was playing the left side while at even strength and playing the right side on the power play. So you have a little bit of a line shift. You have a bit of the ability to play both sides depending on the situation. So I think that they get more flexibility adding a Yandle than they would have just keeping a Ryan McDonough and trying to find some other stopgap measures on the point.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy hockey. We're discussing defensemen with Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Gus, one player I wanted to ask you about is Dennis Wiedemann of the Calgary Flames. We know the Flames got a ton of offense from their back end last season. Wiedemann had a career year, the most points in his career since he had 50 back in 2008-2009 with the Bruins. Is he a guy that you would sort of say buyer beware, given that he's never really been, you know, never been in the 55 point category until last season, and the year before he was down to 21 points.
And Dougie Hamilton,
Hamilton's presence on the Flames blue line now as well, of course.
Well, I would put the entire Flames blue line on notice. I just don't think that you're going to get the same kind of performances out of, let alone Dennis Wiedemann is definitely a buyer beware, but. You know, I mean, he does have his own ability. If you're looking for depth, and you're not just drafting two big-name defensemen. You do need depth. I don't expect Wiedemann to do what he did last year. At the same time, he also had a little bit of an opportunity that he took advantage of with Giordano out of the lineup. But I think that all three of Giordano, Brody, and Wiedemann will probably have a bit of a softer offensive year than they did last year. Add in Dougie Hamilton, and you know, I got to tell you, though, the look of that defense from an element of mobility and transition is incredible. I just don't think that it's going to translate to as high as results as they may have produced last year as far as fantasy goes. So I'm excited to see what the Flames do as far as the blue line talent and how they adapt and incorporate their newest member in Dougie Hamilton. But I wouldn't put any Flame close to the levels that they produced at last year.
Gus, we wanted to ask you about Trevor Daley, and I think you'd probably agree he had a pretty underrated year last year for Dallas. He had a career-high 38 points, and he obviously is now a member of the Chicago Blackhawks coming over with Ryan Garbutt in the Patrick Sharp trade. Do you expect those totals to go up even more? What are you expecting from Trevor Daley this year?
Ooh, I would actually expect a lot less from Trevor Daley. I would expect him to become more of a role player rather than the main cog. See, the other thing with Daley, too, is that they really did take a lot of experimentation into consideration in Dallas. You know, they had six left-hand shots. They had to do something, and he incorporated some of that time to be able to pad his stats. I think that Daley at this point was, you know, he received a lot of relatively good ice time and capitalized on that, but I just don't see him being the main go-to guy that he was perhaps in Dallas, in Chicago. I think he's become more of a role player. There are some defensive elements that are starting to be questionable. Like, I mean, as he ages and his agility and speed is just starting to go a little bit. So I would, if you have to pick Trevor Daley in your fantasy in a fantasy draft, do it as your final defenseman. If somebody else wants to pick him ahead of that, then let them deal with the consequences there.
Gus, you talk about too many left-side defensemen in Dallas, and let's move over to Detroit, and they had too many left-side defensemen, and that's one of the main reasons why they brought Mike Green in this offseason. What do you expect for him?
I love Mike Green. Like, I think that the fact that he's injury-prone and a little fragile is a definite issue, but I think that Mike Green can potentially be a good top 15 defenseman. I think that we got him somewhere in that 45-point range, but you know, I mean, there's two things that have definitely been missing from Detroit's lineup. Mobility, he definitely provides that. Aside from Nicholas Cronwall, there are very few point shots that were able to get through the traffic and to find that stealth, really soft area the way that Mike Green can on the weak side of the play. And you know, I think that he adds a vital element to that. And Detroit in itself, the power play, the way that they've structured it, requires those two shots. So if Jeff Fleischel decides that he wants to more or less keep whatever Mike Babcock was doing last year and build on that, then I think Green becomes an even better, more vital component. So as far as where he plays, I think that he'll be productive in any spot. I don't expect him to be a top two pairing. Well, he could be. He's a middle pairing defenseman at this point in time, at even strength. And then you give him his power play time and you got a 45-point, 10-goal defenseman.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Gus Casaros from McKean's Hockey, discussing fantasy hockey defensemen. Gus, wanted to ask you about a couple of Nashville Predator defensemen. That's Shea Weber and Roman Josi. Sort of a role reversal last year. Weber, a bit of a down season in getting 45 points, whereas Josi had a career year with 55 points. Do you expect that trend to continue, or do you see them flipping back where Weber is the more productive of the two defensemen offensively?
No, I think that Josi is going to end up taking that role entirely. I don't think that they'll end up with such far apart as far as points disparity goes. But I also don't think that, you know, I would tone Weber down a bit. 20 goals might be a very high watermark at this point. I would aim for 15 and 30 to 35 points. And with Josi, I would go 40 to 45 points. So there's a little bit of a hit. But overall, I think that Josi is going to be the major, he'll be the blue line scoring leader for Nashville. And I don't ever see that reversing. I think that Weber has his own skill set that may lead to other things on the ice, but it may not necessarily lead to more offense. At the same time, I think that Nashville overall got a very, very good set of offensive production from guys like Colin Wilson and Philip Forsberg that likely won't happen again. Same thing with Mike Ribeiro. So I think that that's going to take its toll on Josi's points. Having said that, there is some fantastic mobility in Nashville, and let me tell you, Yossi is one of those guys that can carry the puck as well as any of the best in the NHL. So you give him that opportunity, and if he learns to exploit another, you know, an explosive top-end gear, he could challenge for a top-five spot in the NHL. He's just, among blue liners. He just needs to put it all together and get the support required in order to get some peripheral points to really pad those stats.
Gus, we just have a couple of more defensemen here to ask you about, and we love this. I know people out there who are going to be in hockey pools coming up in the next few weeks are loving this insight. Victor Hedman, he's a guy we asked you about last year, and you look at his point totals, you forget, though, he missed a significant amount of time, had 38 points in 59 games. But, of course, in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, he had 14 points in 26 games. Are you expecting Victor Hedman to just continue that progression and get back as being a top 10 defenseman in scoring?
Absolutely, if not a top five. I mean, there's the potential there for him to become. I wouldn't call him a challenge. I don't think that he'll challenge for the top spots overall, but you know, he's become much more than just the defenseman we expected him to become. I think that he's added an element of being a rover, so he can jump into the play and be part of the play and get back into position quicker than the play develops. That's a very important characteristic on his part. So from the problem here is I think that Hedman is going to be overvalued based on his playoff performance. So yes, he's a top five defenseman in your league. He's probably going to be one of the first five defensemen picked, if not one of the first three or four. So the demand is going to be high. So the question is, if you don't get a Victor Hedman, who is there to replace him? And that's where I think it becomes more challenging. If I had to choose other than Carlson and PK Subban, Hedman is probably number three. But I'm sure that he's number three on everybody else's list too. So you have to either take the risk and take him early, or try to find a replacement in that specific range that you feel comfortable replacing Hedman's production with, and that might be a bit of a tough one. There's a bit of a drop-off between him and the rest of those top 10 players.
Final question for you guys. You know, you look at Boston, a bit of a mess on the back end. Obviously, Dougie Hamilton goes out, and then Dennis Sadenberg, just from an actual NHL perspective, they're not very deep on the back end. You look at points-wise in a fantasy pool, how do you read Torrey Krug and Zdeno Chara there?
Oh, man. Hey, you know, Chara isn't the guy that he used to be. I would say that from last year. He wasn't the guy that he used to be. So I think what you expect from Chara is more towards the average, and you're kind of hoping for the average. The toll, he's already hurt. There's, you know, you don't want a guy advanced in age and his size and to be hurt and take away with the elements that actually did make him successful. Like, I mean, mobility and strength and agility for such a big, big guy was key to him being so productive on the ice, right, and dominating on the defensive end. For him to be ailing at this point, I think is just adds to the fact that he's on this downslope. So I'd be very careful about Zdeno Chara. For the rest of the blue line, it's pretty ugly. Like, there are very, very few mm-hmm. replacements, I feel, that can just step right in and take, you know, the spots that Dennis Seidenberg is going to leave open. And Torrey Krug is the main cog now. Okay, he's overtaken Chara for the last two seasons, and it's not going to change this year. I think that this is going to be the year where he finally overtakes that being the number one guy on the blue line and leaves Chara behind. At the same time, you have other guys that might be able to step up and offer a little bit of potential. I wouldn't expect a lot of fantasy points out of them, but you know, Zach Trotman had a great little audition last year. I would expect him to get a full-time role this year. Guys like Colin Miller and Kevin Miller probably have the ability to step in and give a little bit of secondary offense. But as a whole, Boston's blue line is a disaster, and I would stay away from as many of those guys as possible. It's also going to affect goaltending. I'm sure that you discussed goaltending with someone with Kevin Woodley earlier. But, their goaltending is going to be horrid. So.
Gus Katsaros is McKean's Hockey Director of Analytics and Pro Scouting. Gus, appreciate your time this morning, and thanks for the insight into fantasy defensemen.
Pleasure is always mine, guys. Thanks, and happy fantasy.
Thanks a lot, Gus.
Take care, Gus. Let's head to break. When we come back, we will discuss goaltenders as it relates to your hockey pool, and we will be joined by Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine coming up in about 10 minutes' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live.
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 11 in the morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Fantasy Hockey Preview Show. This segment brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, shoes, and snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. A huge stick sale going on at Royal Sports right now. Check them out over there on Pembina Highway. You can get all your gear for your upcoming hockey season.
I'm waiting for Ezzy's forget about Drew joke.
Well, it's still D-R-E-W straight out of Tuxedo, right? Like that?
That's great. That's terrific. Richie seemed to like it a lot there.
And I knew it was coming. It was still funny.
Okay. Talking about goaltenders here as we continue with our fantasy hockey preview show. And, I mean, last year, Carey Price was you know, unbelievable. He was tremendous.
Carey Price was, a superhero last year.
Led the NHL in wins with 44. Tied for the, or no, pardon me, Marc-Andre Fleury had more shutouts with 10, but Carey Price had 9 shutouts. Is he your number one goalie?
By the way, a quick aside, that's the quietest 10 shutouts ever.
Ever. I mean, I looked at that, I'm like, is that a typo? Is that supposed to be 1? I wasn't sure. But, you know, goaltenders, I mean, successful goaltenders in fantasy hockey, if wins are the barometer, so much of that depends on the quality of the team. Is Carey Price still your number one? Is he your number one goaltender drafted in fantasy hockey this year?
How could he not be? He wins the Hart Trophy, yeah. Wins the Vezina Trophy, and not only that...
It depends on how good you think the Canadians are going to be.
But not only that, Drew, he's been consistent. So you're talking about a guy that has had multiple 30-win seasons and a guy that was coming off shutouts in the Olympics for Team Canada. So, I mean, he's kind of rode that wave from the 2014 Olympics. And then he's continued that. Like, there was no drop-off. He was the best goalie in the Olympic tournament. He was the best goalie last year. Might have not been the best goalie in the playoffs, but Montreal wasn't very good either, getting out in the second round there. So, but to me, yeah, in fantasy hockey, you got to factor in everything. 44 wins, you mentioned the shutouts and everything like that. So even if you're in a simple pool, which again, wins and shutouts are usually the kind of basic point scoring system for goalies, I think you go with Carey Price. And there are some other goalies that I think you could consider there, but I think he's a step above Drew.
I mean, Carey Price is talent-wise the best goalie in the league.
Yes, talent-wise, no argument.
There's no question about that.
But do you think the Montreal Canadiens get 50 wins? Are they the second best team in terms of points in the NHL again?
Likely not.
Yeah. So don't you have to downgrade Carey Price accordingly?
Can he sustain the success he had last year? No. Can he be pretty darn good and still be a top three netminder? Probably. I don't think he's a clear cut number one.
I think he still gets 40 wins.
Probably. I mean, it's hard not to get 40 wins.
He doesn't
get
44. What he had last year, but I still think he's not going to drop down to 35 wins, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I mean, you look at how many games he's going to play and look at who wins in this. I mean, he played 66 games last year.
Yeah.
So, he's going to win. I mean,
you're saying it's not an incredible workload for a number one goaltender?
No, it's a solid workload. In this day and age, it's a pretty solid workload.
Right, but it's
I'm
not
saying,
75. It's not like, you know, gets, Corey Schneider and 75 games that he, you know, or 70 games.
I'm saying nobody, like, you know, the way the stats are kept these days, he had, you know, you look at overtime losses and different categories and things like that. But I think that the player, and I know Henrik Lundqvist gets a lot of play here. I think New York might take a bit of a step back. I know he was injured last year. But Braden Holtby, for me, would be in the talk for number one.
Played 73 games last year, which was the most.
Yeah, 41 wins.
Yep, and that Washington team, I think, has gotten better. I agree with Rich. I was wrong about them last year. I picked them to miss the playoffs last year. I'll admit that right now.
Eat some crow?
I'll absolutely eat some crow, and I really like this Washington Capitals team this year.
Got a crow in the oven. Works quite well.
No, I mean, I agree with Rich. I think there are other goalies. You got to throw Pekka Rinne in that conversation, and, you know, a guy like Devan Dubnyk obviously had a career season. You know, I'd be a little weary of drafting him too high, mm-hmm. just based on the fact that, you know, that was the first year that he's really stepped into that kind of elite level of wins and all that. You know, and there, you got to also factor in, as Richie mentioned, you know, Henrik Lundqvist had that injury, and is this Rangers team going to take a little bit of a step back? I don't know if they do, actually. I think Lundqvist is usually pretty solid, and the team is very good.
I'm curious to hear why you think that they're going to take a step back, and I mean, that's probably a conversation more for next week's show.
We'll leave it for next week. But I, you know, Drew, I think it's possible this team, we'll get into it next week.
Okay.
You know, just wanted to...
That'll be a tease.
Just wanted to mention, too, a guy that 2 years ago was in that 40-plus win range, Semyon Varlamov, and another guy. To me, if I'm in a pool, again, I'm. This is just my opinion, I'm pretty high on the Colorado Avalanche this year. You know, last segment or 3 segments ago, whatever it was, talking about Nathan MacKinnon, I think his point totals will be up. Varlamov, too, you know, 28 wins last year. I think this Colorado Avalanche team is better than they showed last year. Defense is better this year. So Varlamov is a guy I think is going to have 30. He'll be back up to 35, 40 wins this year.
If I'm tiering it out, I'm putting Price and Holtby in the first tier, and then have the next tier is where I have Lundqvist, Fleury, and Rinne, and Bishop you throw in there too because Tampa's so good. I don't love Ben Bishop as a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, had a great year last year, but I'd put that probably as that third tier. And then you get to the next level. The question is, do you throw Jonathan Quick into that tier? I think you still need to have it proven that he's going to have a bounce-back season.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to be rested, and they're going to be a different squad. I know they're going to have hurting on defense a bit with Novoinov not going back permanently. You had Aerhoff. He helped you offensively, but not defensively. But the rest is a huge factor there.
Well, as you mentioned, Varlamov in Colorado is sort of maybe being a little bit under the radar as a sleeper. I think Sergei Bobrovsky in Columbus is another guy.
I mean, he won the Vezina a couple years ago.
Won the Vezina. He's got tons of talent. Columbus last year was so bad, but that was largely due to the number of injuries they sustained.
Yep. I like that one, Drew. I agree with you.
Yeah, I think the Blue Jackets are probably a playoff team in the East.
I think they ought to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I think they ought agree with you there. And you know, and we know that Bobrovsky's got all the talent in the world. So if you're looking for a guy who, on a bad team last year, still put up 30 wins in only 51 games played.
If he plays,
you know, you add another 17 games played there, you know, 66, 67 games played, on a better team, he could be up close to the 40-win plateau, a guy you might get some good value for later on in your fantasy hockey pool when it comes to goaltenders. With that in mind, let's head to break, and we'll talk more about fantasy hockey goaltenders. Kevin Woodley, managing partner of In Goal Magazine, will join us to talk more on the subject. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's 11:30 in the morning, Central Time, if you're in Winnipeg, or I guess if you're in North Dakota as well. Wherever you may be listening to us online, tsn.ca, tsn1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Kevin Woodley. Kevin is the managing partner of In Goal Magazine. He's also the Vancouver Canucks correspondent for NHL.com. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
Kevin obviously brought you on. You're in the midst of our fantasy hockey preview show. You're the managing partner of a magazine called In Goal Magazine, so it seems like you'd be a good guest to discuss fantasy hockey goaltenders with. So that's going to be the subject. We were talking last segment about Carey Price. Led the NHL 44 wins. The goals against average, of course. He was tremendous last year for the Montreal Canadiens. That's why he was the Hart Trophy winner in the NHL. In terms of fantasy hockey and, you know, putting an emphasis on wins and putting an emphasis on shutouts, is he your first goaltender you would select in a hockey pool?
Well, there has to be one caveat thrown out with me in any discussion of fantasy hockey, and that would be that in my annual pool, the one I've done for about the last 15 years, my nickname, the name that goes on the website, we track it, is the Donator. So throwing that out there, I would take Carey Price as the number one goaltender overall. And I know a lot of people are talking about, you know, just how hard, you know, I mean, it was a season for the ages, and how do you repeat that? And yeah, maybe he won't. Maybe the numbers won't come close to what he did last season. because it was a pretty spectacular season, and he was relied upon pretty heavily. Yet, if you take a look at kind of the way he's trended and some of the changes he's made in his game, this is a guy that, you know, is kind of, not that he's made any big changes this year, but this has been a steady progression towards this. There's been ups and downs along the way, but ever since Stefan Waite got there as a goaltending coach a couple of years ago, and, you know, obviously a guy who has two Stanley Cup rings on his fingers with goalies like, you know, Niemi and Corey Crawford, you've just kind of seen a steady progression, a steadiness in Carey's game. You know, he hasn't taken all of the aggressiveness or instinct out of Carey, but he's made him a little more, you know, straight line in terms of where he plays and you know, when he chooses to be aggressive. So it's, you know, it's a really nice package, and Waite's a guy that, you know, he's going to continue to do that work day in and day out and continue to look for things for guys to improve. And I think it's been a really nice partnership. I don't know that, you know, the goalie coaches that preceded him, it wasn't about them not seeing the same things. It was more about Waite coming in with the authority of those two cups with two different guys and being a voice that, you know, Carey couldn't ignore. That, you know, when discussions started to take place about, you know, some of those aggressive tendencies that were costing him at times in years past, he had no choice but to listen. And you've seen a really nice balance develop in his game between the instinct that ruled it and at times caused problems before, and sort of that technical consistency and steadiness of the past couple of years.
You know, speaking of goalie coaches and goaltenders working well together, Mitch Korn and Braden Holtby. Braden Holtby plays 73 games last year. I guess the question, Kevin, is do you expect him to play that many games again this year? And where do you see his win totals going? And especially for fantasy, do you think those numbers can stay up there?
I don't know if they, well, and Braden's a special athlete in that it didn't look like it cost him physically in terms of fatigue as the year went on or even into the playoffs. 73 is pretty high, guys. Yet, you know, the 73 he played last year compared to any other previous season, I bet he'd tell you he worked less, in part because, hey, Mitch Korn comes with Barry Trotz, and that's a defense goaltenders are going to want to play behind in terms of the ability to trust the structure in front of you and know where guys are going to be and know what they're going to take care of and therefore what they're going to leave you to take care of. I also think that, you know, again, we talked about price and aggression and reining it in. Same with Holtby. The same applies. I mean, they haven't taken that out of his game completely, but he picks his spots better. And there's a little more, there's a tightness and control to his game that leaves him not having to work as hard. I mean, you know, flailing around out there can, you know, especially over the course of 73 games, can be pretty draining. When you're playing a little more contained, a little more controlled, a little more spot-to-spot, patient game, letting it come to you instead of chasing it, it's amazing how much less wear and tear you get over the course of a season. So you add those factors together, and certainly I think Holtby's capable of carrying a heavy workload again today. Again, this season, I just don't know that it's ideal. And I think with Grubauer almost certainly the number two there, and maybe a little more trust in you know, in his style and physical makeup than Korn had with Justin Peters, you could see that workload back off a bit for Braden Holtby this season. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's still among the league leaders.
Kevin, what do you make of Dallas' situation with Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi?
It's a tough one to kind of figure out, to be honest with you. I like both goaltenders. You know, I know it's easy to pick on Lehtinen, and he wasn't great last season. But, you know, the Dallas Stars defensively for the past few years have basically been Edmonton Oilers south. And when you talk to goaltenders around the league and you talk about, you know, shot quality as a very real thing, you know, I know there's arguments about, you know, how much impact it has in the advanced stats world, but you know, a place that a shot comes from on the ice is very different if that guy's coming on a straight line at you versus one timing a lateral feed across the ice. And the Stars were pretty porous in terms of the types of chances they gave up. And for the past couple of seasons leading into last year, I thought they just leaned so heavily on Lehtinen. Like, and you see it in the backup numbers there. I mean, it was Lehtinen or bust in Dallas for all those years because they demanded such a high level out of him to compete every night that backup goalies just didn't have a chance. They couldn't match that level. And you almost wonder if last year it just kind of, you can only sort of guess or have that backdoor given up or not have that guy where he's supposed to be for so long before you stop trusting it and you start to cheat. And, of course, as soon as you start to cheat, we saw this a lot in Edmonton in the past few years. As soon as you start to cheat this league, they pick you short side and don't make that pass across. So I wonder if some of that kind of compounded and caught up with Kari Lehtinen last year. It'll be interesting to see. He is a goaltender. You know, again, I talk about, you know, all three guys so far, aggressiveness. And Lehtinen's a guy who Mike Valley, who is now the development goaltending director, and they brought in Jeff Reese to be the goalie coach. Lehtinen's a guy that was having to be constantly reminded to kind of rein it in. He had a tendency to continuously get too aggressive. And after all those years of chasing and those types of chances, it'll be really interesting to see what Jeff Reese did. I mean, obviously, he backed up Steve Mason and simplified his game a bit. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see the same a little bit with Kari Lehtinen. And what'll be interesting will be how often he has to remind him. Because Lehtinen, again, you'd back him up, and whether it was a few games or a few weeks, eventually he'd get back out there to a place where, listen, if you're a couple feet outside of your crease and you're playing on a team that doesn't protect the back door, that's a couple extra feet you have to travel to beat that pass before that one-time option. It's just a lot of extra movement, and extra movement opens up extra holes. And so really curious to see how that goes. Antti Niemi isn't pretty, guys, but he's been effective. And, again, there's another guy. He went to San Jose and went the other way. The coaching staff there that has since moved on from a goaltending perspective, Wayne Thomas, a longtime disciple of Warren Strelow, preferred more of a skating game, more of a backwards flow, get outside of your crease and retreat with the play type game. And that wasn't Antti Niemi's game when he arrived there. It looked like the game he was trying to play by the time things were over there. And frankly, it didn't look like a game that fit his strengths, especially against the Kings 2 years ago in the playoffs. I mean, he just got caught off angle, out of position, over-aggressive so many times during that comeback by the Kings in the first round. It just didn't seem to be a style fit for what were his strengths and what are his strengths as a goaltender. So again, curious to see if Jeff Reese reins him in and goes back to that little more controlled, little more conservative. And I know it's not pretty with that hunched over stance, but he's got really good hands back there. The style he played when he won a cup in Chicago, he got away from that in San Jose, and I'm really curious to see what they do in Dallas. As far as what that means for fantasy, I can't tell you, but if you're in a league where you need one guy, I'd be avoiding that situation because I see that as a back and forth throughout the year.
Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is Kevin Woodley, managing partner of In Goal Magazine, discussing goaltenders, a fantasy hockey perspective as we enter into the 2015-16 NHL season. Kevin, one of the best rags-to-riches stories in the NHL last season was Devan Dubnyk of the Minnesota Wild. Obviously started the year in Arizona, got traded to Minnesota. The year before, he was been everywhere. Edmonton, disaster. He'd been Montreal. He'd been, I believe, Nashville, if I recall correctly. It had been a bad year 2 years ago. What do you make of Dubnyk entering into this upcoming season? Is he the goaltender we saw last year in Minnesota, where he was a world beater for a good 3 month stretch of the season, or is he, you know, going to go back to what he's been for the majority of his career?
I know a lot of people look at the track record, and I think if you take out that miserable season 2 years ago, the track record isn't all that bad. Again, steady progression up through the Edmonton system to the number one before the collapse. And again, hey, like, not to go back to the Edmonton thing and comparisons to the Stars and defensively, but, you know, the common denominator when you look at the Oilers goalies that failed miserably was mostly under Eakin's system. Nobody seemed to be on the same page. And talking to the goaltenders, you know, they get out of training camp and still not be sure who had what and who was going where. And that's a lot of guesswork as a goaltender. You saw Babcock say, first thing he said on his first day in Toronto this year is, you know, the guys are going to know where the shots are coming from. And that makes your life a lot easier. And Dubnyk has that in Minnesota. But a lot of people, I think, look at his, you know, the 2 years ago, and they wonder if he's going to have a regression this year. I got to be honest, guys, I don't see it. I think you're going to see the guy that you saw last year. And I say that having been on the ice with Devan this summer. And, you know, there were some changes he made. There were some revelations there for him in that year of misery. He changed the way he did things in the offseason in terms of working out, and the way he focused his strength training on the position specifically. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the head trajectory training as something that was key for him. and he only had a snippet of it last year. I watched him train on it for a whole summer this year, and I actually think he's going to be even better. Obviously, defensive structure plays a role in this. You know, I always say goaltending never exists in a vacuum, and clearly the Wild are a team that I think goaltenders would like to play for, and yet, before Dubnyk arrived, they couldn't get a save. So I think he's going to continue right where he was last year. Talking to people who watched him at the Andy O'Brien camp in Vail, Colorado, which is a really high-end shooter camp and get-ready-for-the-season conditioning camp with the likes of Crosby, Tavares, Duchesne, McKinnon, Jeff Skinner. A lot of focus on offense. I talked to more than one person that was at that camp that said Devan Dubnyk was the dominant player in that camp this season. So for all those people looking for him to fall off the map again and end up in the American Hockey League after getting this contract, frankly, I don't see it. I think you're going to see more of the same, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see him a finalist, if not the top of the list, for the Vezina Trophy this year.
Kevin, by the way, Minnesota Wild fans are absolutely loving this right now. We got one more question for you here. I wanted to ask you about Frederik Andersen, who had his best season. Well, he's only been in the NHL for a couple seasons now, but he had a great season for the Anaheim Ducks last year, and I know you've written about him. And by the way, you should definitely check out Kevin's work on NHL.com. He does a great job covering goalies. Do you expect those numbers to increase? What do you expect out of Frederik Andersen this year?
I expect a little more. Like, again, there was a case. We talk about goaltending never existing in a vacuum, and what worried me about the Ducks last year was that young defense, right? Like, tons of talent, tons of skill on the back end, but a young defense. And usually when you have young defenders, prone to mistakes. And so, you know, there were some ups and downs for Andersen. There were some ups and downs for that defense that you know, they kind of played off each other a little bit. It was a good year last year. I think he's capable of more. There are things in his game that remind me very much of Carey Price in terms of some of the patterns and movements. He's an exceptional puck handler, and yet they didn't turn him loose with that last season. They really reined in his touches and what they wanted him to do once he got the puck. And part of that is the boards in Anaheim and the glass in Anaheim can produce some funny bounces, and they just want to bring him along slowly. But, I mean, you watch him play with the puck in practice and move it around in his feet. There's a skill set that, frankly, to this point in his career, has been untapped. In terms of stopping the puck, there are some tendencies. You saw it as the playoffs went on. When the tide changed in that Chicago series, he started to open up on pucks and not track very well and kind of open up his torso and not close down and close off holes. Instead, he was kind of turning off of things and trying to get handsy and in effect, opening holes that pucks ended up going through. He made a step late this summer to kind of seek out, I mentioned the head trajectory stuff. He made an attempt to spend a week with the guy behind it and made some strides there. And I think you're going to see those trends. It'll be interesting to see how quickly they translate. He didn't spend the whole summer on it, kind of like Doobie the year before. He just spent a week. But there's a trigger there that should allow him to recognize the difference between when he was playing well in the playoffs and when he started kind of opening things up and chasing a little bit with his body rather than, like closing off the space. He's such a big body, and he still has the foot speed and skating skills to play outside the blue ice. And that's a combination very few guys have at that size with that type of agility. That's why he reminds me of Price in certain ways. And I think changing some of his tracking habits and some of his movement pattern habits as a result, there's more there for him. And he works so hard. He leaves no stone unturned when it comes to improving his game. That's what, that's what led him to seek this out this summer. He went all the way to Halifax to get it, in fact. And I think, that's a pretty nice package. You're going to continue to see kind of an upwards arc for him. And it's going to present the Ducks with a very interesting decision to make coming up, because Gibson has a ton of skill as well. And there's a learning curve there that needs to occur. And I'm really glad they're going to let it maybe play out a little more in the American Hockey League. I think you saw, to me, Minnesota's a perfect example. Darcy Kuemper has early success. Steve Mason in Columbus, early success. You leave him in the NHL to the point where he requires waivers. Everybody knows he has so much talent, they're not going to let him clear waivers. So you've got a guy who then hits a roadblock in the NHL. You can't afford to play him. You can't afford to send him down, and you stagnate his growth. It really 3 years in the American Hockey League is ideal, and I like the fact the Ducks have put themselves in a position where they can let Gibson go through those growing pains at a level below the National Hockey League.
Kevin Woodley is the managing partner of In Goal Magazine. He's the Vancouver Canucks correspondent for NHL.com. Kevin, tremendous insight into the world of goaltending. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Take care, Kevin. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss NHL. We're going to discuss fashion. We'll tell you why.
Not with you, Drew.
Yeah, not with me. We'll tell you why.
You're on the Curve. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your team's next opponent. And I'm not just saying that because Keener happens to be sitting next to me here in studio here
nice
at TSN 1290. It is nice, exactly. Keener, thanks very much. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's great being here. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's good. We're glad. So you're in the jersey business, and it's sort of a niche market, I would suggest. Probably not a ton of people involved in the jersey business. So how did you get into it? What made you say, jerseys, I want that to be my career?
Oh, well, I started doing it for myself back when I was like 15, because I had a Jets jersey, and I wanted it to look like they wore it on the ice, and no one would do it like that. So I thought, I got to do this myself. So I taught myself to sew and bought some fabric and just started doing it, and then everyone started coming to me
to customize their jerseys. Now you do obviously customizing of pretty much everything under the sun as it comes to jerseys, and you'll make jerseys for people's rec league teams. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much what we got into because I was getting a lot of rec teams coming to me saying like one of the first teams I ever did was for Teasers. they Burlesque Palace came to me and they're like, do our jerseys, and it had a lady on the front. So I had a lot of fun with that. Since then, yeah, now we started a big legit business. We do the numbers for the Bombers on Field stuff, and we're doing tons of rec teams these days. That's what we're here for.
Well, this sounds terrific. I mean, it seems like everybody loves hockey, but then to sort of be able to make it into part of your career and make it part of your life, it must just bring football too, I guess. You mentioned the Bombers there. It just must add sort of a whole extra layer of enjoyment into everything.
Yeah, it's like I made the CFL. Like we're out there on the field. It's huge.
Well, let me ask you. We've seen, and we were talking about this before. You guys came in, and we were talking about some of the awful jerseys that you've seen professionally, not ones you guys do, obviously. The ones you guys do are top-notch. But some of the, what's the worst professional jersey that you think you can remember seeing? Maybe putting you on the spot a little bit here. What's the worst professional jersey you guys can remember? I mean, going back, is it the Islanders fish sticks jersey? That's the one that probably comes to mind for most people.
Yeah, that was out there. I actually own one of those because
really?
I like Bertuzzi, and he started off on that team. So I got myself one of his jerseys from that season. It's just that the numbers are done really intricately. Like you'd have to see it up close. Up close, those jerseys are great, but far away, they're awful. But I really can't stand Canucks' current jersey. It's a little boring. Like When the NHL switched over to the Edge jerseys, everyone had the opportunity to switch up what their team looked like. And Canucks just looked like they mailed it in, like, at the last minute. Like, oh, is that due today? Jeez.
I definitely agree with you on the Canucks jersey. I think we'd all agree that even the simplistic Canucks jersey from back in the day was probably a little bit better. But, Drew's asking you about the jerseys that you didn't like. But what are your favorite jerseys that currently exist in hockey right now? And then we also wanted to get into some of the alternate jerseys that have just come out recently and then also I wanted to ask you about, I know you have an opinion on this, advertising on jerseys.
Yeah, well, I think like some of the nicest ones out there right now, I love the Bruins. They just have so much detail in their name and everything. It's three color name, three color numbers, nice bright colors. Yeah, I like colorful jerseys. I like the Oilers going back to the blue and orange. Mm-hmm. Those are nice.
They'd love to play like they used to play when they wore those jerseys more often.
Yeah, it's more like the memory. Like, remember, we were awesome and we looked like this on the ice. But, yeah, advertising on the jerseys. Like, I get the CFL does it because they need some cash. But, like, really, NHL? Really? Why?
Well, because they're greedy. I mean, we know the answer to that. Is it safe to say that, you know, when you're looking at a jersey, you know, you're looking at sort of intricate details that the average fan probably isn't looking at?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you talked before about the numbers and the stitching and the three color numbers, and so you're sort of you have obviously a more professionally trained eye to what you're looking for versus what, you know, the average fan might be looking for in base aesthetics, let's say.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, one of my favorite jerseys of all time is the Minnesota North Stars from, like, the late 80s when they went to the finals against the Penguins. They had a black trim on their jersey, and if you didn't see a game-worn jersey up close, you didn't know that that black trim was just really close-together stitching. Like, from far away, it just looks like a layer of twill, but up close, it looks great. It's a beautiful jersey. Gretzky in the old days, I loved his jerseys because he always did something weird to them. Like in 91, 92, he started putting his kids' names on the inside hem. Like, no one knows that stuff. I love
you
it.
Do.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's really interested in that stuff, but I love it.
Keita, were you a fan of that black New York Islanders jersey that they came out with? Sorry, and when the Winnipeg Jets do eventually host a Heritage Classic game, what are you hoping that they go with as far as an alternate jersey goes?
Yeah, well, I got a text from a buddy about the black one, and he's like, look at these. And I was like, oh, wait till you see them with numbers on them. It might really change it up. But as soon as they released the customized one, he's like, it looks kind of.
You weren't crazy about it.
No, but I guess we'll just see if that team finishes first overall this year wearing that jersey.
Yeah, they'll look pretty bad in black.
Quickly, because we're right up against it. People, if they're looking to get their jerseys customized, if they're looking to get jerseys for their rec league teams, where's the best place to find you guys?
The internet is the best, like keenerjerseys.com. Yeah, we're all over Instagram doing all sorts of stuff. Yeah, we're inundated with rec teams now. It's hockey season. Everyone's getting their jerseys done. Just everyone's going with green because Dallas went back to that green. So MTS Iceplex is actually telling teams not to get green jerseys because everyone's skating out there looking the same these days. So, yeah, just come to us. We've got tons to choose from. You can be like an artist with your jersey. Like, it's come to that at affordable prices.
There you go. KeenerJerseys.com is where you can find them. Big thanks to the guys from Keener Jerseys for jumping on and joining us. Thank you, Juliet. It's the daughter over here with us here in studio. Big thank you to our other guests today, Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Big thanks to Kevin Woodley, managing partner of In Goal Magazine. Big thanks to Pete Jensen, fantasy insider from NHL.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba 40th Annual Luncheon, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball here on TSN 1290.